It's Tuesday, December 15th. We had a good week of football and a great Monday Night Football ending. The rest of the media can finally admit the Chiefs are the team to beat in the AFC. Taysom Hill struggled, and Oregon has a chance to ruin USC's season on Friday. I am Jeff Schwartz alongside Get Going, who'll be in just a second. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smart on You. And guys, I'm glad we wait till the end of Monday Night Football to record the beginning of this podcast because, wow, what an incredible game. The Ravens win 47-42 over the Browns, shades of the 2018 Rams and Chiefs classic on Monday Night Football. And there's so much to start with, so much to begin with. Lamar Jackson goes out of the game for what he was doing, but nonetheless, comes back in the fourth quarter, 4th and 5, makes a play. Ravens take the lead. Browns come all the way back and score with just under a minute left. Ravens take four pass plays, I should say, get in a field goal range. Tucker blast home a 55-yard field goal. And the Browns end up then giving up a safety on the lateral play, which ends up screwing everyone who bet on the Browns as the Ravens do cover that game by 5. So here are my takeaways, my overall takeaways. Let's start with the Browns, okay? I've been harsh on Baker Mayfield, and he proved me wrong tonight. He did a great job of moving the ball down the field, especially second half. He got into more of a rhythm, and we saw more of a drop-back passing game from him, which is something that I've been critical about, right? When things are schemed up well, Stefanski, the Browns, OC and head coach does a great job of making things work well for this Browns offense, right? They run the football. They move Baker out of the pocket. They play action pass. They do great things to get him set up in great situations, right? And what he struggled with for a lot of the night, but not in the fourth quarter, was the drop back passing game, right? When he had to set his feet 4 wides, 3rd and 8, and make a play. And as the game went on, he got more confident. The Ravens kept bringing pressure. It just never got home, right? They got close to being there, but it just never got home. And so I'm moving off of my Baker Mayfield might not be the future to more maybe he is, but he's more of that Jimmy G and Jared Goff type of future, right? Where things have to kind of go perfectly right throughout a game to get him a situation. Remember, the Browns had 4 fumbles and didn't lose any of them. Lamar Jackson missed part of this game because he was pooping slash cramping. So the Browns got a little bit of some breaks here and there to make this a close game. But my main takeaway for the Browns is this, is when you're a young football team, we saw today no starter over 30 years old the entire season, young football team, and they're a good football team. These heartbreaking losses can fuel you to something special, okay? For a couple reasons. One is that when you have a meteoric rise like they did, right? Last year, not a playoff team, enters game 9-3. Everyone's hyping them up, talking about them, right? You start feeling yourself, rightfully so, right? I mean, you're playing good football. You start feeling yourself. And sometimes you need a loss to realize you haven't arrived yet. And the NFL is better than anyone else at humbling you when you think you've arrived before you have. And often these losses can do that for you, right? So the Browns players remember this feeling of not finishing the game against their rivals, right? Being down 14 points and making a great comeback, right? They know they can do that. But it takes a playoff caliber team, a team like the Ravens, to pull out a game like this in the end. And I think that again, the Browns will learn from this feeling of heartbreak, of the ache they're going to feel for a couple days now preparing for the Giants next weekend. I believe that's also either Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football. And they're going to use that as motivation to not let this happen again, to not let the Ravens or any other team win close games like this. The Browns will work on finishing these games. So in a loss, there can be positive. That's what I think the positive is here, is that this will fuel them, guys. It's going to be you can have important losses, and I feel like this is an important loss for them. On the flip side, the Ravens offense, wow, are they back? I mean, are we seeing a new Ravens team again? As they're getting guys healthy back from COVID, this is an offense that for a long time was stagnant. And they did a lot of it by the ground tonight. Lamar Jackson, again, passing, just he was missing guys. It's just not quite in sync. And Chris Brown at Smart Football's fabulous account was saying Greg Roman had a lot to blame for this, right? Just kind of not a sophisticated passing game. He said it's one of the least sophisticated in the NFL. Lamar actually had a more sophisticated passing game in college, which he did at Louisville, right? Bobby Petrino, his coach, is a pro-style coach. But that being said, though, there's still some disconnect, right? He's missing guys, and we're having drop passes. And same thing that I talk about the Steelers, and we'll do them in a little bit, is we're just the passing game is so important in the NFL now. I mean, that's how teams win and lose games. And he made plays when it mattered tonight. But the drop-back passing of both him and Baker Mayfield leaves a little bit to be desired. And if the run game is not quite working, what other gear do you have? Now, again, Lamar made a fantastic play in the fourth and five. Not many quarterbacks in the NFL can do that, right? He's rolling out of the pocket. The Browns sucked their defense in, and Lamar hits him behind for a big touchdown. Brown actually caught that ball. So there were obviously positives, right? Running the football was great. Lamar looked like he was healthy again and moving around. The offense was running the ball. The Patrick offensive line was doing a good job. They protected him decently well for the most part. There was some slippage in for Lamar on the turf. So my takeaway for the Ravens is that they kind of are the team we thought they were. It was good to see their offense come back defensively. Can't allow 42 points to the Browns. Can't allow them to come back from 14 points. So there's things to work on there. A lot of that is injury-wise, getting guys back from COVID. So to wrap this up, Browns, great effort. So you can learn a lot from a bad loss, a heartbreaking loss. I think they will learn a lot from this loss. And the Ravens, obviously now, if they get the 6 seed, man, and they play Pittsburgh, or excuse me, 7 seed, and play Pittsburgh as a 2 seed, Pittsburgh doesn't want to see this Ravens team. It's the last team they want to see, right? The Ravens have played well against the Steelers this season, even in a game when Robert Griffin III started. So the Steelers, not the best, but the Ravens now probably in the playoffs. The Browns probably in the playoffs. You have 3 teams from that division in the playoffs. Fabulous game, man. I love the NFL. For games like this, man. What a game. The entire timeline was talking about football. No politics, and everyone was enjoying the game, right? There's nobody who didn't enjoy this game. It was a fabulous game. Everyone enjoyed this game. It was fantastic. All right, let's get to Gabe. We're going to talk about some In-N-Out, some Jets, some Taysom Hill, some Chiefs, all of that. We'll do that next. All right, let's welcome in Gabe. All right, guys, let's bring in Gabe. Gabe, how was your football weekend, sir?
My weekend of football was great. The Jets continue to do what they're supposed to do. I won my fantasy league, and I took my kids to In-N-Out Burger for the first time during the Sunday games.
Ooh.
And success. 1 out of 2 loved it. The son ate the burger, animal style, and the fries. Daughter ate the fries, not as big a fan of the burger. So I'd say that's a win.
So the thing about In-N-Out is so interesting to me. Is that people say, oh, it's not good because the fries aren't very good. It's a burger place, not a fry place.
Yeah.
And you can get your fries any way you want it. You can order them more well done, crispy, a little soggy. You can put whatever you want on them. People are just lazy with that take. I am not a fan of that take. Also, one take, before we get going here, you mentioned the Jets. You know, I see these people floating around about this, you know, Trevor Lawrence doesn't deserve to go there. What do you mean? Like, this is what the NFL does. The NFL is a draft. I mean, is the draft, quote, fair? I don't know. But the Jets are going to hire a new coach. They're going to have a new system, a new everything in place. Why is it unfair for Trevor Lawrence to go to the Jets? I don't understand.
This is the NBA-ification of the NFL happening before our eyes, and people need to say a firm Heisman to this take. Guys, it is not your God-given right to play for a guaranteed championship-contending team just because you're pretty good at sports. For our whole lifetimes, Jeff, you won by helping build a team around you and getting a little bit lucky. Let's be honest. You didn't just walk on to the team that was already pre-made to win a championship. It doesn't work that way.
Right. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, the NFL system has been working, guys, right? We've seen players that they get drafted on, quote unquote, bad teams as quarterbacks end up making that team a lot better, right? And they end up having opportunity to win a bunch of Super Bowls, right? I mean, look, the Chiefs haven't been bad, but they didn't win a championship in 50 years. Here comes Pat Mahomes. And they won a championship. Like, that's what happens, right? You have a chance to Joe Burrow right now with the Bengals. I know he's hurt, but he looks like he's got them in a new direction. Look at Lamar Jackson with the Ravens. Now, the Ravens are more successful, but nonetheless, you can be a bad football team, draft the right guy, and end up, you know, soaring up the top. So, all right, man, let's start with some fun with the Sunday Night Football game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talk about a few teams who it seems like drafted well and have enjoyed the success since, at least for the most part. Jeff, you've been saying all year long, even with me nagging at you, that the Steelers are good, but they're not better than the Chiefs. I think most people on Monday morning, the simple take was, man, the Steelers kind of suck, and here come the Bills. That was the whole summary of Sunday night. I don't know if everyone should be crapping on Pittsburgh like they are, but they are. So, semi-related. If that Chiefs win that we saw on Sunday was like the awful bad Pat Mahomes game and they still won that way, I no longer think there's anyone who can beat them. I'm going to say you've been right all along. unless the Bills can do it, because they can score a lot and they can score fast. Two things you've warned me could be a problem for the Chiefs. So I'm going to say there's no team left except maybe the Bills on their best day.
And we're talking about the AFC only right now, correct?
That's
we're
right. Talking about yeah, let's keep it to the AFC, one step at a time.
I think there's many things to talk on the NFC side, and we'll when we get to that some part of the show. So my reaction from the game that we saw Sunday night is simple. Is I do feel very vindicated, right? I told you guys that the Steelers' offense really worried me, and it was more about the ability to get the ball downfield. We saw when they got behind, when you watch the Bills play, it's a good example. The Bills are a good example on offense. How many times do they have guys wide open?
Yeah, it seems like all the time.
All the time. How often do the Steelers have guys wide open down the field? Never. The offense just, it's so hard to move the ball on offense. And then rushing the football. So everyone says, well, Steelers don't run the football. Yeah, they don't. And there's some good reasons for that. One is they're always in shotgun, right? But when you're in shotgun to run the football, a couple of things happen. One is that it limits your menu of plays you can run, right? Because the running back in shotgun's on either side of the quarterback, right? So if he's on the right side of the quarterback, how many different things can you do with the ball? You can pitch it, I guess. But you're basically going to run to the offensive line. The offense is left. That's your only option to run there. So defenses know this. And then when you take out the ability for the quarterback to run the football on a shotgun run, the defense, again, one less thing to worry about. So they crowd the box. They know when they're going to run the football out of the shotgun formation. Last night, they went under center a little bit, the Steelers did, and they ran the ball a lot better. So the Steelers' offense right now, it doesn't have a lot of creativity, doesn't have a downfield passing game, too many drops, obviously mostly from two guys, but those two guys are part of the offense. That's part of your offense identity. And so we're seeing a lot of issues with them on offense, and I feel very vindicated. Now, Buffalo's an interesting story here because this game was fairly close till Ben threw the pick six. And even on that, you know, the Bills offense didn't score more than 20 points. They scored 19 points, right? Like there's something missing there on that offense too. And no, am I wrong?
No, I don't know, man. I've been putting up with you slandering the Bills for a season and a half now.
Well, I'm gonna pull up the good defenses they played this year, the good teams they played this year, and how many points they scored. Because on offense. So they played the Steelers, they scored 19 points. Steelers, good defense, don't get me wrong, right? They played the Patriots. They scored 24 points against the Patriots. They played the Chiefs, scored 17 points against the Chiefs. Like, they're scoring a ton of points against really bad teams, and that's great. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to score bad against bad teams. But their offense yesterday was okay. Pittsburgh's defense is really good. I get that. But the question becomes, can they beat the Chiefs, right? And there's two ways to beat the Chiefs, and the Bills do one of the two things. The first way is to rush four and sit back in zone and hope Pat makes mistakes. That's not the Bills. The Bills do not rush the passer very well. We saw them play this season already. Pat was virtually untouched. The second way, and what you're alluding to, is scoring a ton of points. And I only think one team in the NFL can do that, and that's the Green Bay Packers against this Chiefs team. Buffalo can, in theory, do that, but you got to score 35 points to beat them. I mean, the Raiders won 40-32. Even the Dolphins game, if the Dolphins would have won Sunday, they would have had to score 34 points. Now, the Chiefs did score 10 points outside of their offense, so that's important to note there as well. But it's a lot of points. And, you know, the Bills have scored 26, 34, 27, 30, 44. You know, there's a 16, a 17, 18, a 24. I mean, it just, you got to score a ton of points to beat the Chiefs. And that's why the Packers, I think, right now, entering week 15, are the team I think that could do it. Again, it's really hard. Pat Mahomes played his worst game of the season and still threw for nearly 400 yards, and the Chiefs won, you know, going away. But they do have a problem, Gabe. And I think this is an issue that I know Chiefs fans don't necessarily agree with my take here, but I do think it's a problem. Chiefs cannot close out football games right now. It's a big concern. They've now had five straight games they haven't covered. And think about this game. They're up 30-10. It's a Dolphins offense that really is not explosive with Tua. They allow them to come all the way back, right? It's now 30-24. The Chiefs have to convert a 4th-and-1 to ice the game away, and then Tyreek Hill doesn't even run out of bounds. Excuse me, doesn't even stay in bounds, right? He runs out of bounds, stops the clock. If he stays in bounds, the game is over. The Dolphins have no more timeouts. Instead, he runs out of bounds, stops the clock, 2-minute warning stops the clock, and the Chiefs have to kick a long field goal to ice that game away. They could have missed that field goal. Dolphins have a short field. Could have been blocked. Dolphins scoop and score a touchdown, win the game. The Chiefs keep doing this, Gabe, and it worries me when you get to the playoffs because you're playing a better team, obviously, in the playoffs. If they're playing the Bills, by the way, and don't put the Bills away, Josh Allen can come down and score. It's not the Dolphins. It's not Drew Lock. It's not Teddy Bridgewater. It's the Bills' offense. So I worry with that with the Chiefs. They might beat themselves in the playoffs.
Well, okay. So I'm going to spend my time talking about the Bills then. I think most people I follow woke up on Monday morning and were like, put Josh Allen right back at the top of the MVP race. Let's talk Josh Allen. I saw my buddy Peter Schrager saying he'd rather build a team around him than Kyler or Tua or Deshaun or some of the other young guys out there. I think we saw, by the way, the game that everyone remembers for the D-Hop Hail Mary over the Bills, Josh Allen won that game for them in the final 2 minutes with the kind of drive you're talking about. Like, he can pull magic out of his you-know-what. Are you sure that you got the Josh Allen take right the last couple of years, or could he have just figured it out? Like, I know why you were skeptical.
Well, I was definitely wrong about that. I mean, I think it's clear that he is, and his improvement over the last year is something that it's almost unheard of in NFL history.
Yeah.
People that said, by the way, oh, he's going to improve his accuracy. No. You got lucky here. That doesn't happen in the NFL. Like, to pat yourself on the back. I get it, but Josh Allen's the outlier. He's the outlier in all of this. He's what Alex Smith was. Bad for many years, got a new coach in Harbaugh, went to Andy Reid and became a good quarterback. Josh Allen was not good the last 2 years. Obviously, this year, much better, improved. Brian Daboll, their OC, gets a lot of credit for that. But the idea that he was going to be this guy, we have not seen this in NFL history. So everyone who says, oh, I knew it. Yeah, you didn't know it. You hoped it was going to happen, but you hadn't seen it happen before. And the Bills obviously put a lot into hoping that it happened, and it did, obviously, with what they've done with this offense. So I give the Bills credit for sticking with him, obviously. But look, his game last night, he was 24 of 43 for 238 yards. He played well in the second half for about the third quarter, but like, I think we act like this was an MVP game, and it really wasn't. Aaron Rodgers had an MVP game yesterday. So did Pat Mahomes, even with two tipped interceptions. I just don't know if Josh Allen, he didn't play an MVP game yesterday.
Well, okay, but it was a primetime game against a team up until that moment people thought could win the conference, and he did everything he needed to do. I think the person who got more love, frankly, on Twitter, which is where we pull a lot of the info for this show, was Stephon Diggs, who was like always in that, to me, that second tier, like really nice player, fantasy players knew him, but was not an elite guy. And all of a sudden, like, I'm watching the game last night, and it's the only person we're allowed to talk about, the top receiver in the whole league, is now Stephon Diggs. Is that a little bit of an overreaction? Like, you see him play. He's obviously a nice player. Is he the best?
Why do we do this, man? Like, I don't know why. I mean, I get why we do it. It's reactionary. It's social media. We're going to do this. But I think the reason why people come to me and listen to this podcast is I don't do that, right?
Right.
We talk about how long the NFL season is. And we talked about this last week. You know, the thoughts we had the first 4 weeks, even look at yesterday, okay? The Giants, greatest 5-7 team ever. Oh, my God, they're incredible. We bet against them, laid a complete egg, right? Complete egg. Even the Dolphins offense, everyone's like, Dolphins, great. They're so good. And it's like, well, look at their numbers on offense. Like, that was their best game they played all season on offense with Tua. Like, it's hard to play in this league. And all these thoughts we have, you have to take an entire season. You cannot look at one game and say, this is the end result. Stephon Diggs is the best receiver in the NFL. Because, I don't know, I mean, Travis Kelce is leading the NFL in receiving yards right now. DK Metcalf is second. Stephon Diggs is doing a great job. Don't take anything away from him. Devontae Adams, if healthy for a full season, he might lead the NFL in receiving. If DeAndre Hopkins played on a different offense, he might lead the NFL in receiving. I just don't know if we have – I don't often like to say best, because I feel like I like tiers better, right? Like a tier one, tier two, tier three, because often there is not a best, definitive best. There is a quarterback. It's Pat Mahomes, right? That's easy to talk about. But there's also a close 1B, Russell Wilson. The one position in the NFL that there's not even close, it's Aaron Donald, big gap, and then like Fletcher Cox. Like, that's pretty simple. But this whole idea of like, this has to be the best guy, I don't buy into that. So, no, he's not the best wide receiver. Is he one of the top 10 or 8 best? Sure. But to come after a game like that, be like, the best, I don't get that mentality.
All right, well, then let me ask you this, because I heard some smart analysis from, I think it was Tim Hasselbeck doing SportsCenter after the game, and he said some stuff that I needed you to help interpret, which was, Diggs is obviously, good, like you just described, at all the things you need to be good at as a receiver. But he spotlighted his understanding of finding space in his zone and having quick short space movements. And I didn't quite know what to make of that. I kind of think I understood the zone point, but the quick short space movements I needed a little help with.
Well, I think in a zone, you know, you have to sit down in a zone, right? So if you're getting bracketed in a zone, or there's a tiny little hole in a cover three, right? Like he's able to find that hole in the zone and settle down there, stop his feet, catch the ball, and then accelerate into where, or really away from where the defender is. So, you know, man coverage, it's you versus the guy next to you, right? So it's a one-on-one matchup. You could just run by the guy. You could stack him and run by him. But zone coverage, you know, it takes a precise route runner to find that little area where you have to be, right? You're hooking into the area, you're dragging across, you know, or times there's, you know, you're running a drag route, you have to stop somewhere, catch the ball. So there's a lot of things that kind of are that short area quickness that works well with what Diggs does. A lot of comeback, you know, he let him run a comeback routes last night. So that's part of what I think Hasselbeck means.
Well, and I think it also brings us full circle back to Josh Allen, which is if a guy was not an especially accurate quarterback, but has a receiver who can find him the extra foot or two of catchable space and run the slightly better route to make up for maybe, you know, his lack of perfect accuracy. Maybe that's why we're seeing so much improvement in the passing game. Because we're talking Allen, I want to throw something at you. Tell me if there's nothing to this or this is actually, like, interesting to you. I couldn't come up with an actual topic for this, but my guess is, here's my hot take. This is the best quarterback class maybe ever that we're going to see in the postseason. I'm going to run you through the names we expect to see as of this moment. We'll have absolute surefire lock Hall of Famers in Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Big Ben, and then a probable Hall of Famer in Philip Rivers. All those guys are expected to be in. We have two former MVPs who could maybe still sneak in the AFC in Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton. We have potential future stars and MVP types, don't roll your eyes at this, in Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. And we have a few guys where the jury's still a little bit out, but let's be honest, they've overachieved their whole careers in Alex Smith, Jared Goff, and Ryan Tannehill. There's no stinker quarterback set to make the playoffs this year. I can't think of a better year for quarterbacks in the postseason than this.
Yeah, it's a good idea. It's a good, and you know, you got Tannehill in there. Yeah.
There's no, the worst quarterback in the postseason will probably be Jared Goff, who's been to a Super Bowl.
Or it'd be Alex Smith or Daniel Jones.
Alex Smith has like one of the best winning percentages of all time.
If you're doing like as of now, which of that crew is the worst? I mean, Alex, or of course, Daniel Jones gets in. That'll be the best 5-8 team of all time, Gabe. Do you know that? Look, the NFL, I was thinking about this today. I was just talking about the quarterbacks in the NFL. And there was a time when, you know, the early 2000s, maybe in the, you know, the first 10 years of the decade, there was, I think, a shortage of quarterbacks, right? We were worried about what would happen in the NFL when Manning retired and Brady Brees, which they obviously haven't retired yet. We have too many quarterbacks now. But there's too many guys. I mean, James mm-hmm. Winston should be starting in the NFL. There's no surprise. Andy Dalton, in most years, 5 years ago, would have been starting in the NFL. And look at who's coming next year. Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and the kid from BYU, Zach Wilson, and Lance Harbor.
Yeah!
Trey Lance from North Dakota State. Plus, Sam Darnold's going to find a home somewhere. Oy. Carson Wentz might find a home somewhere. I mean, there's so many quarterbacks in the NFL right now that we have almost too many of them. It's an incredible time to watch the league. Almost everyone has a guy any weekend that could beat you.
Well, you're identifying the exact problem in Philadelphia, which I guess is a good problem to have. They got too many quarterbacks. They like Jalen Hurts now. Some people this morning, Monday morning, are waking up thinking he's a world beater, and here come the Eagles because he had a pretty good game, and he beat the Saints. I mean, credit to him. First start, beats the Saints. Stats were pretty good. I don't know. I'm not all the way there. You have been basically saying, you know, they don't really matter. And oh, by the way, the Saints are overrated anyway. You've also been telling us, excuse me, you haven't been saying the Saints are overrated. You've been saying Taysom Hill of the Saints is overrated.
He wasn't very good. What a surprise.
Yeah. So I don't know what to make of this Jalen Hurts win and the situation in Philly. I don't even care about talking about that. I think I really want to talk about what the hell are the Saints supposed to do now that Taysom Hill has been slightly exposed. And maybe they should go to the actual backup, Jameis Winston, instead.
Yeah, it's a great question. So Taysom Hill has played four games this year, right? Two against the Falcons, who he's played well against. One against Denver, which he didn't terribly play well against, right? He didn't throw the ball very much, but Denver was playing, you know, Kendall Hinton at quarterback. So there was no contest there. This is the first time he played a real defense with a real pass rush. Mm-hmm. The first time this year, he was behind early in a game, like big behind early. He was behind in the Falcons game, I think, like 6-3, but like big behind early, right? 17-0. And we saw he ain't the guy to bring you back. And this is the problem in the NFL is if you're Taysom Hill, or even if I don't want to put Lamar Jackson there, but he won the MVP. But this is a problem that he's had as well is, yes, when things are going well, you are a great quarterback. But what happens in adversity? What happens when things aren't going well? That's what makes or breaks your career in the NFL. Pat Mahomes is great, obviously, when everything's happening. But also when they're behind by 10 points, he's great. When they're behind 24 points, he's great. When they're up 15 points, he's great. So are Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson, all these guys. But what happens, even Deshaun Watson, by the way, he entered this weekend in the fourth quarter on a bad team. Number one in the NFL in passing yards, number two in passing touchdowns, and number two in yards per attempt. Now, obviously, this last weekend was a disaster. It probably went down. But even on a bad team, he plays well when it matters the most. And Taysom Hill didn't prove that this weekend. He could do that. Can he do it moving forward? I would say no, but of course, anything's possible, Gabe. I mean, I just don't see it happening moving forward. As of today, Monday night, as we're recording this, supposedly Breeze is maybe coming back, maybe not. It's an interesting decision by the Saints because now they're tied with the Packers. The Packers have an easy schedule on the way out, and they need that home field advantage. They don't want to go to Lambeau in January to play an outdoor game. And so I think if Breeze is back, they're going to play him. But look, this Taysom Hill thing, he's 30 years old, guys. He's not your future quarterback. So you're not being the Chiefs with Taysom Hill. With Drew Breeze, I might take the Saints +3. With Taysom Hill, I'm betting on the Chiefs. He's not gonna fool the Chiefs. And against the Chiefs, you're gonna have to score 35 points. That's not what Taysom Hill does. So I'm gonna be right on Taysom Hill. What a silly. I don't know why Sean Payton is so enamored with this offense. I don't get it, man.
Well, okay, I think this was the validation weekend for a lot of the Jeff Schwartz takes that have bounced around on this show. And Taysom Hill did not look like the guy who can win you a Super Bowl. So I guess let me ask the question more bluntly. Should they go to Jameis until Drew is ready? There was no big rush for Drew a week ago when we talked about this. Now maybe, I don't know, is Jameis the stopgap?
Well, he's not going to be because they're not going to admit that this was a mistake after one bad weekend.
Yeah.
Like, look, we know coaches have egos, right? And Sean Payton has put a lot of money into Taysom Hill. He's put a lot of equity into Taysom Hill, just like his own reputation, Taysom Hill. After one bad game where really the offensive line didn't play their best game, they didn't run the ball the best, the Chiefs' defensive line is not the Eagles' defensive line, you know, they might throw him back out there, especially if Breeze is not ready. You might not want to rush Breeze back to get him hurt again for the playoffs. So they've made this offense for him. He will most likely start this weekend, and he'll play. They're not going to bring Winston unless they're behind, you know, 14 points with 7 minutes left, and then they have to throw the ball to come back, which is an indictment on Taysom Hill, right? That they have to consider bringing in a backup quarterback to go down the field. It's the same thing, you know, that the Dolphins did a couple weeks ago. They brought in Fitz to try to score a bunch of points.
Yeah, it's a strange scenario. Well, we got here by you saying that there's almost too many quarterbacks right now. So let me go back to where I began with the Eagles. If they're even worth discussing, you know, now they have Jalen Hurts. They say they're going to go with him next week. Are we done with Carson Wentz forever? Like, is that it? Is he done as an Eagles quarterback?
So it's really interesting. I'm going to pull up the tweet that Dan Orlovsky sent out, but he basically put out a tweet that, and he knows Eagles very well, that, you know, basically, and it's something that we've come and talked about for a while now, is there is some disconnect between Carson Wentz and the Eagles, and really Doug Peterson. And he put it out here. I'm going to get this tweet just to make sure I have the right word, the wording said. Where's that? Okay, here it is right here. The Wentz-Peterson relationship is weird, man. This is Dan Orlovsky tweeting. It seems other quarterbacks bring out the best in Doug as a play caller and designer, and Wentz brings out the worst. There is just some form of block or disconnect between the two of them. Reich was that for Wentz. Doug doesn't seem like it. And that sums it up well. We've talked about this, right? That there's no rhythm in the offense. And with Nick Foles, well, he's not as talented as Carson Wentz. He just did what they told him to do. Okay? Yeah. If it was a three-yard pass, he took the three-yard pass. A seven-yard pass, he took the seven-yard pass. If it was a deep shot, he took the deep shot. He threw the ball quickly. If you noticed, Everyone played better on offense. The offensive line played better this weekend. The wide receivers played better. Not as many drops. And look, I don't think it's Jalen Hurts being an amazing quarterback. He did a good job for his first start. I think this weekend to go to Arizona, I really almost want to fade the Eagles off that win in Arizona. And we'll get to that obviously on Wednesday's show, Thursday's show. But I just, there's, and Dan's right, right? When you watch them play yesterday, it seemed more in sync, more in rhythm. Doug Peterson was being aggressive. They had good play calls. Things clicked and worked. And when you watch Carson Wentz, it's a dumpster fire. And so the Eagles have to decide, because the contract for Wentz is massive. If he's on the team next year, he has to play. So do you keep Doug Peterson with Carson Wentz? Do you get rid of Peterson? Which it would be weird to do that like in March, right? So do you get rid of him now and say, hey, we're going to bring in someone else. We've decided we're keeping Wentz. Do you try to force them to make this work in a regular offseason without COVID? They can meet more often and figure out a way to make it work. Or do you ship him off to the Colts and just eat some of the contract and let him be the Colts quarterback next season?
Okay, that's interesting. So you're linking him to the Colts because we don't think Rivers will be around for long and because of that connection to Reich. Okay. Well, I don't know, but it doesn't seem like the coach and quarterback should stay in Philly. And if they can get rid of the money for, you know, for the quarterback, obviously it looks like they got something in Jalen Hurts. I think that has to be their preference, and ownership and the fan base has to be thinking about Jalen Hurts.
I know that. And this is, again, we cannot make reaction after 1 week of football. We can't do it. I know it's fun to do, folks. And if you want to go watch those TV shows that do that, be my guest. But after 1 week, in a game that Hurts played okay in, he wasn't efficiency great. He was just good. He was good for his first start. Nothing special. It was just good. Like, he's going to struggle this week in Arizona, I think. They go to Arizona. Arizona, Kyler Murray looked healthy this weekend. Much, much different team when he's healthy. And then we're going to be like, oh, we're off Hurts. Like, just wait the last month of the season. There's three games left. Let's evaluate his entire month of football before we decide whether or not the Eagles will keep Wentz or keep Hurts.
Seems very fair to me, Jeff. That's not how this works, though. So I don't think that's going to be what happens. Let me bring one more team up before we get to moving the line, where I think probably people just keep waiting and waiting and waiting to have a take on. I can't find a Rams take out there. But I'm here to remind you that because they played on Thursday night, they sort of get lost in the shuffle. It is entirely possible that they will beat Seattle week 16, win the division at 12-4, be on a 5-game win streak, won like 7 of their last 8 or something, and that no one will have paid attention to the Rams that are just a couple years removed from a Super Bowl with basically the same team. Like, what? When can someone tell me something smart about the Rams? Because I'm afraid they are super dangerous.
So I think that people still have a PTSD of the Super Bowl from a couple years ago where Goff had that opportunity and he wasn't able to do it. And then you look at last season and kind of in the same offense, right? Jimmy Garoppolo got to that game, mm-hmm. Super Bowl, not being great. He was good, but not fine. Great. Had the opportunity to close the game out and just didn't do it. And I love that we talk about it, because look, in moving the line, we don't talk about the moving the line part. I like to do this kind of like, you just throw this at me. So I thought about this today is I would love to see a Packers Rams NFC championship game. Mm-hmm. You have the Rams, their defense is outstanding. And if Goff gets quote unquote hot the last month of the season, their offense is plenty good to win the NFC. And if Whitworth comes back, their left tackle, who, you know, he had injured his knee, but he's been kind of working to try to get back for the playoffs. That's a huge boost for them as well. And no one's talking about them because I think we still have that PTSD of like, you know, in the end, Goff just can't do it. He's not that guy. And look, I think there's some validity to that, that like when it comes to nut crunching time, if you need him to make multiple plays over multiple drives to win you a game, might not be the guy. But if your defense is playing like it is, you might not need him to be the guy. You might just need him to just do enough to get you to the Super Bowl. So the Rams, I'm glad you brought this up because I thought about this today. I'm thinking about it as we're getting close to the end of the season, like the playoff picture, who I would bet on, who I would think about. The Rams are interesting because if they continue to play well, a Rams-Packers NFC championship would be really, really fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, what I'm saying is they seem like a value pick if you're into betting on things because – they're definitely good. They might be great. And nobody spends any time talking about them at all. I guess the Colts are maybe that same team over in the AFC where I feel like I don't really still know anything about the Colts, and yet they're going to end up with 10, 11 wins. So we'll have to come back to the Rams when the playoff picture is set and talk about whether their path looks good.
I just think that in the NFC right now, and really this was a big weekend for the AFC, right? We had four games. We're going to have one tonight that are playoff determining games, four huge ones, right? Chiefs, Dolphins, and the Steelers, Bills, and the Colts and the Raiders. And now we're going to have Baltimore and Cleveland tonight. We're not even like the NFC is a topic that no one's talking about this week because there's no reason to. We've been all AFC heavy. And so your point about the Rams kind of floating under the radar is very accurate.
Yeah. Well, let's move the line because it's a chance to talk about a few of those teams that we maybe are not spending as much time on today and should be. It's our little betting segment. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with that in a second. Time to move the line, Jeff. I had to get a little creative here in order to fit this into the way we do the over-under, so bear with me. Can you tell me over or under 2.5 in the MVP race voting for the following guys? All right, so I want to know if you think they'll be top three or not. Here we go. Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Okay, no-brainer, right? Like right now he's number one?
Probably, yeah. One or two, yeah.
Okay, and the only other guy who might be number two, who fell slightly, I guess, maybe this week, is Pat Mahomes. So you're saying he's inside that top three for now.
Yeah, he's not gonna. There's nothing he's gonna do that will take him out of top three.
He'd have to like lose out, basically.
Yes.
Okay. Then it gets a little bit hard to pick who that third guy is. So I'm gonna throw three more names at you. Four names actually. Russell Wilson.
I would say no, because I have one guy that I think will be three right now that's on this list.
So Russell, who was surefire number one for the first half of the season, as we get towards the end of the year, even though he's playing okay, probably not going to get major MVP consideration.
No, because I'll tell you the reason why at the end of this. I have one
good
person
tease.
In mind.
Good tease. Tom Brady, they're going to probably win out.
No.
You don't think there'll just be some nostalgia play here at Tom Brady's?
No, I do not think at all. They did not come out smoking like I thought.
Okay, fair enough. Tom Brady not in the MVP conversation. Your guy, Josh Allen, we talked about him earlier. Is he in there?
Possibly.
Possibly, maybe, but probably needs to just have a hell of a last few games here and look dominant.
Well, the next guy I want to talk about, this will change how I feel based off what he does.
All right, and then the last name I have, the only non-quarterback, but a guy who I bet people can make a great argument for, Derrick Henry.
If he rushes for 2,000 yards, which he's about 500 away from, he will be in the top three. I mean, he will not win the MVP, but he'll be in third in MVP voting.
So tell me why, if he ran for 2,000 yards, carrying that team every year that he's been there, in games where he seems like the only thing that got them the win, why wouldn't he be the MVP?
I mean, it's tough to argue because Adrian Peterson was the last one to do it, I think, and he won the MVP. I was there in Minnesota that year. We were 7 yards or 9 yards short of the entire rushing title all time. But Ryan Tannehill is also very good in that team. And I think that, you know, in 2012, Christian Ponder was not Ryan Tannehill. And so when you look at that entire team, Ryan Tannehill is, I think, top five right now. And I haven't looked at the updated stats in all his efficiency numbers. So he's having a great year too. So it's hard to give, in my opinion, the MVP just to the running back when your quarterback is equally as impressive as your running back, where the Chiefs obviously are led by Pat Mahomes and the Packers are led by Aaron Rodgers. It'd be tough to give it to Henry over those two guys.
All right. You have been famously quoted as saying essentially that running backs aren't worth huge contracts, and you've made very few exceptions to that rule. I believe he signed a 4-year, $50 million deal not long ago.
Like, I think it was like $42 million, somewhere around there. Look, is Tennessee's record any different this year if they have James Robinson at running back this year?
Yes.
You really think so?
What? Yeah. Well, this maybe is the essence of this show. That's this such a stupidly obvious answer to me that, yeah, of course, the best running back by far is better than a guy who barely made the Jags. So, yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, so my question is what's the worth of Derrick Henry to this offense compared to what the worth is of like, do you think that if they took that $12 million they owed Derrick Henry, right, and got themselves two pass rushers for that money. Would they be a better team now to have a quote-unquote lesser talented running back but have a better pass rush?
That's slightly different question. I would say that's debatable, and that's where I come to you for analysis. I tend to think, having watched yesterday, basically watching Washington play, that really you need a quarterback, a guy who can block for the quarterback, and a guy who can smash and kill quarterbacks. Those are the only things you should spend your draft picks and your money on. But Derrick Henry seems like an outlier in a way. So what you're telling me is it's going to come down to Pat and Aaron and who wins, you know, the most games heading out. And Derrick Henry maybe ends up in that third spot if he keeps running like he has.
Yeah? Agreed.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go to some predictions you had before the season that are looking pretty good, but right on the cusp as we finish out the year. So you bet the Panthers under 5.5. They're at 4 wins currently. I want to know your confidence right now, over under 90% chance that you place that bet, or that you win that bet, excuse me. So Panthers end the season with the Packers, DC, and the Saints.
Well, they're going to lose to the Packers and they're going to lose to the Saints. The Saints don't need to win that game in 2017. So I feel really good about it. I would say over 90% confident.
You feel very confident they can beat Washington in a couple weeks and fulfill, or lose to Washington in a couple weeks and fulfill your under bet.
All I got to do is, if they lose to the Packers and Saints, it's done.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. All right, so you're still feeling good about fading the Panthers. Okay, Bucks, you had them at the over 9.5. They're currently at 8. They've got the Falcons twice and the Lions. So I think you're going to get this, but I don't think you should celebrate it. I think you have to keep this quiet.
I don't feel great about it.
All right. But they'll get across the finish line here and win you a little money on that. And then you had the Lions over 7, I think. They're at 5 now. Titans, Bucks, Vikes to close it.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
I did have the Chiefs over, which cashed, by the way, today. It cashed this weekend. I took the Ravens over, too. That's not going to cash.
No.
Here's
kind of a stupid question, but I've been thinking about it for a while, and I wonder if anyone ever considered it. What if right before the season, next year, let's say, a team that looks like total crap, like basically like the Jags, where you're like, I don't know, like it didn't work out, you didn't get the number one pick, you're still going to be garbage. What if, like, right before week one kicked off, fire the coach, go to the interim guy that all the players love, rally around the interim guy? It seems like every time you send in an interim guy, the team wins a few games they shouldn't win. Why not just start with an interim guy?
What's interesting about that is, actually, this is the year that is the opposite of the way it's normally been. We covered this on the gambling show. Interim coaches in the first game don't win against the spread ever. Like, they don't win. This is the year that's been so different than the other years, which is no surprise, because 2020 has just been a shit show. So that'd be very funny if the team did that. Like the Cowboys next year, they fire McCarthy before the season starts, before the first game, and interim coach Kellen Moore leads them to the Super Bowl.
But it's always like the defensive coordinator who has the locker room, and he's like some 36-year-old guy, and it's like, well, yeah, why wasn't he the coach the whole damn time? That's what it always happens.
It's difficult to do the entire part of the coaching. Like, when you just have to worry about games and no roster management and no offseason program, all that stuff, it's a little bit easier. I think the tough part becomes building your roster and building a culture, building a scheme.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Colin Cowherd, who we both love, said this on the air today, and I was fascinated by it, and I want to know. He thinks that maybe Bill Belichick will start Jarrett Stidham against the Jets week 17, because Jarrett might lose, thereby making the Patriots the reason that the Jets don't end up with the number one pick, because now they have one win, and in a tiebreak scenario, the Jags would go ahead of them. So they're not going to tank, but maybe they don't try as hard, because Belichick doesn't want to have to face Trevor Lawrence for 10 more years. So I want a percent chance you think I agree with this kooky take from Colin. Over under 99%.
You agree with it?
Yeah.
Oh, you agree with it 100%.
100% I buy this theory.
Of course you did. The rest of us are like, Colin, like, lay out the sauce for a second, buddy. By the way, Colin now, he's he's just all in the cigars every night, just like up, like he's just trolling. He's turning a lot into me on Twitter. I don't know if I like this. He's trolling Steeler fans, and he's drinking and smoking cigars and moving to Vegas supposedly, and he's just a new guy.
I don't know what's going on. I kind of expect to see him fly by me on the 405 in a red convertible. I don't know if he's having some sort of midlife thing, but yeah, there's a lot going on there with Colin, but I liked this take. I liked this take a lot.
I'll just say something real quick about Colin, because obviously we both like him, but there, I don't think people realize how hard it is to do 3 hours of radio every day when you have to talk about the same four things all the time, right? It's a national radio show. It's not like local, you know, 103.7 The Bull in Milwaukee. It's not that, right? It's talking about the Lakers, the Cowboys, Aaron Rodgers, the Chiefs, and LeBron. Like, that's what it is. And you have to come up with shit every day. It's hard to do.
It's extremely hard to do. I know firsthand from working with him over the years how hard it is and how much time he puts into it. And the other thing he doesn't have that many of the shows you're talking about do is callers. He can't just like let angry Steelers fans get on the air today and like kick his feet up and laugh at them.
Correct.
You know,
because he's doing an actual TV show. You can't just have.
Yeah, he's doing a whole lot more than that. So, like, I get it. People don't always love the takes from the biggest names in our industry. Go at them. You know, let them hear it, guys. Tweet at them. But recognize they do put a lot of time into this. And they do their research. Even though people think they're making it up, they're not. They're spending time thinking about this stuff, I promise you. Yeah. All right. Percent chance you're sure that USC still can't make the playoff. Now that Florida lost, SEC gets one, and this crazy Pac-12 scheduling thing is going on.
Yeah, there's zero chance that happens. And I think if you are thinking of right mind, you're a USC fan, you definitely don't want to play Alabama in the first round of the playoffs, because you want to end on a high note and let you know Alabama will beat you guys by four touchdowns. I think same as Oregon last year, we won the Pac-12. And I was glad we played Wisconsin, not LSU, in a playoff. I'm not sure USC, you want to lose to Alabama, or you want to go play like the Fiesta Bowl and play, I don't even know who it would be. So whoever left out.
I think it'd be sort of cyclical. We were supposed to start the season getting blasted by Alabama. We might as well end the season getting blasted by Alabama.
There's no team that had a better come up this year than USC, right? You lost Alabama off your schedule. You lost Notre Dame. You lost Oregon in the regular season when they would have had like a full actual team show up, not like all their guys opting out and have a, you know, and what you're going to face this weekend. You lost Colorado this season, the best team in the South, other than USC, off your schedule. The first two games of the year, you led for a total of like 54 seconds.
Yeah, if that.
Like in one of those two games. Like, and UCLA should have won that game. Look, Keenan Slovis, great in the fourth quarter. That's obviously like 15 touchdowns in his career, no interceptions. But Jesus Christ, UCLA, fake punt? What the hell are you doing? DTR throws a pick six. They don't block anyone on fourth down. The running back, just his eyes are closed on fourth down. Like, what's going on? They had a third string running back in the game on fourth and one. The kid felt himself like a pro running back. Put him in the game. So USC, Oregon this weekend. Oregon's going to allow like 55 points. It's not going to be pretty, I don't think. And it's after recruiting day, which is good because Oregon needs to keep recruiting well.
Well, okay, but hold on. And we can get back to some other things, although we're kind of running out of real football talk here anyway, so we can give this another minute. If USC wins over Oregon, who at least seems like a real competition, has a Pac-12 championship, the SEC is only going to get one in because Bama's going to blast whoever they're playing.
Well, it's only Florida, yeah.
Yeah, so that's over with. Then the Big 12 isn't anything exciting. Iowa State?
Clemson, Notre Dame are both in, and Ohio State.
But what if Notre Dame beats Clemson again? They're not in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's what this hinges on.
I think they'll take a one-loss A&M over USC, probably.
A one-loss A&M having not played in a champ game over SC having won a champ game undefeated.
So beating not a single ranked opponent.
Okay. And wow, man, that's really depressing. What if Ohio State somehow loses to, who would they play, Northwestern?
Yeah.
What if that happens?
God bless if that happens. I guess USC's in then, I guess.
So Trojans are rooting for, they obviously have to win. They're rooting for Notre Dame over Clemson, Northwestern over Ohio State, Iowa State to lose, I guess, and make a mess out of the Big 12.
Probably.
And and Alabama to blast whoever they play and hope people forget about the second best team in the SEC.
Florida beats Bama. They're both in the playoff, I would imagine.
I would think so.
And then USC's out. Look, I said this last year, and people did not like it. I said as an Oregon fan, I'll tell you, I'll repeat again. I prefer that we win the Pac-12 championship and go play Wisconsin the Rose Bowl than get blasted by LSU. We weren't ready to play LSU last season. And look what it did for our program. We won the Pac-12 conference, won a Rose Bowl. We had a top, we had sixth ranked recruiting class last year, or 11, something like that, top 10 class. For USC's sake, I'd go beat up on a Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl rather than play Alabama in the playoff. Just my is like a team building bond. Like just getting beaten by Alabama, all the rumors about Clay Helton, all that stuff is coming right back if you get smashed by Alabama.
Okay. Well, I don't like the pessimism, but you're probably right. Let's end on two. This is sort of the triggered section of the show. So I don't want to make a joke out of this. I want to make sure I phrase this correctly, but I want your honest reaction. So we've read reports that the Cleveland baseball team will lose their mascot name in the future. They'd been thinking about it for a while, ever since the DC football team did it. Apparently, the Cleveland baseball team is going to be the next to ditch their traditional name. So I have to ask, Jeff, as a guy linked to the team, do you think that the Kansas City Chiefs, as they are known, will one day not be called the Chiefs because it sort of falls into the same category?
I mean, one day, maybe not, but they have support of the community to keep the name. I think that's a big part of this. I don't know if the Indians had support or not. I can look it up, but the Chiefs have support in the local community to keep the name Chiefs. Like, that's a part of this as well. I think that's, you know, the Washington football team had not a lot of support in the community. And Cleveland, I don't think, had a lot of support either. The Chiefs, to my knowledge, at least now, have support to keep their name. If that dwindles, then they're probably not.
Okay, so if the same type of movement began in Kansas City, or anywhere, I guess, to ask for this name to be changed, the ownership or whoever would make the decision would take it as seriously as we hear people are in Cleveland or they did in DC. But there's no movement.
And I also think that, I'm looking up now, that the Chiefs are not actually named, I think specifically for an Indian, but they obviously took the mascot.
Right.
Like, or, you know, they had war paint the horse and stuff. Like, I think they're named after a former mayor, Harold Rowe Bartle. Now, I don't know if Bartle was a good guy or bad guy, but
I'm going to guess Bartle, 150 years ago, probably not a great guy.
Bartle earned a nickname as a founder of a Boy Scouts honor camping society, Tribal Mixay, in which he was chief lone bear. Yeah, this part didn't sound great.
I don't love the where that one's coming from.
So it's not I don't think this is the same vitriol and anger that the name Indians and or Redskins brought about.
Yeah. Well, okay. I wanted to ask because I know, you know, you think about these kinds of things. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Interesting move in Cleveland. Lastly, I guess a bonus topic. I know you wrote about this a bit for Fox Sports, and you're always good with your columns when you write them. So I want to know, you know, will I even be able to make it past like two or three comments under your story about Sarah Fuller, the kicker at Vandy, before I just...
Zero comments. Here's the thing about... I'm not going to get into the main beef of the story, the part of the story, but here's what I found so interesting, Gabe, is that this was a historic moment, right? Sarah Fuller kicks an extra point, and she's the first woman to ever score in a Power 5 conference game. So this happened at Vanderbilt, right? 0-9 Vanderbilt. The story was over as soon as it happened. Everyone tweeted out, great job, Sarah, really cool. End of story. Story's done. It's over. There's a college football Saturday that happened. UCLA-USC was on ABC. Big game. NFL Sunday. Nobody's talking about it today. Nobody. Except the people that call this a PR stunt. The people that call it a PR stunt are the ones keeping it alive. You're the ones who are making this a story. It's not really a story. It's at Vanderbilt, okay? Now, the one part of it that I think is a little to the PR stunt part was that she did give a halftime speech in the first game she played in, which – that kickers, I don't care what you are as a kicker, kickers don't give speeches ever. So that's a little odd, okay? Otherwise, her kicking in this game was a reward for her helping them out 2 weeks ago. She didn't have a chance to kick in the first game, so they give her a chance to kick in this game. It was a blowout. Who cares? We don't care when the kid that unfortunately has cancer gets to go on the field, right, and play a snap, or the fifth-year senior does it. She put in the work for the time she was there. They asked her in last minute to leave her soccer team, and they'd finished the season, but to go from soccer to college football. She took all the reps. She did all things right. They reward her with a kick. Like, what's the big deal?
Well, of course there's no big deal. And I think it's strange that people who've actually played sports show her respect and think, you know, way to go. It takes a lot of hard work to get into the position to do that. Nobody's pretending that kicking an extra point is one of the hardest things to do in sports, you know? But she got ready and she did it, and good for her. She made history. That's the attitude I see from people who played a sport for a living. The people who are in people's mentions complaining and whining and calling it all kinds of things and saying gross stuff in the comment section probably never played anything worth a damn. And that's what's interesting to me, is the people who are getting upset by this, not even their reasons. Just what right do you have to criticize her or the university if you've never even gotten ready to play a damn game at any position, let alone, you know, quarterback or anything else?
Because their way of life is being challenged, right? The stupidest comment I heard was, well, okay, so then can men play women's volleyball? I mean, if they need someone to fill in the last second, maybe they can. But this is a unique situation just for a COVID season. It's never going to happen again. They're not going to find a women's soccer player to play college football. In any other year, Gabe, they could have found someone, a former kicker, someone still on campus somewhere, a walk-on. But because of COVID testing, she was already testing. She was already negative. She was already clear. It's not that difficult.
No. It's not that difficult, but it means now that there isn't, the next person won't be the first, which probably makes it a little easier for that person, which is the whole point of progress. So whatever you might think of her or this situation, this will open a few doors for a few people who currently are getting overlooked, and that seems like a good thing.
Agreed. All right, we ended on a little different note than usual, but it was important to talk about that. I feel very passionate about that. It doesn't have to be the story that people made it out to be. All right, everyone, have a great couple of days. We'll be back on Wednesday. We had some winning weeks. Let's do it. Let's keep it up. Talk to you guys then. Have a good one.